Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. My guest today is Mike Falcone. He was a co-founder of the Pyramid Companies, a development partnership. From there, he formed what is known today as the Pioneer Companies, a commercial real estate development enterprise in upstate New York, as well as Denver and Phoenix. He's now chairman emeritus of that company. Among his many service activities, Mr. Falcone serves on Syracuse University's Board of Trustees. Mike, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Well, let's start with a bit of your history as a developer. You co-founded the Pyramid Companies with Robert Congell, but in 1976, you and Congell went in different directions. What were the different things that you were seeing in development back then?
Well, Bob was focused primarily on just shopping centers, and I recognized that there were opportunities beyond shopping centers. He went on to become a very successful shopping center developer, one of the biggest privately owned companies in the country. We went on to become a very multifaceted developer who did every type of real estate that there is. We've done everything from office buildings, assisted living, hotels, medical office buildings, shopping centers, mixed-use projects. So our focus was broader, and in order to continue to expand, we had to go into a different geography, and that's why we opened up offices in the West.
Were you seeing something about just the focus on shopping centers that concerned you from a business perspective, or was this just a taste issue?
No, I didn't see it as a negative. I just felt that that particular segment of the industry had become very competitive, and there were some very strong competitors who had very close relationships with some of the retailers. So not that there wasn't business, but it was sometimes difficult to break in to a developer who had, for whatever reason, a close relationship with some of the retail chains.
Now, Mr. Congell has in recent years centered a lot of his attention on the Destiny
Yes.
USA Mall, and I think probably at least within this region that will always be his legacy.
Yes.
All things considered, do you think that project has yielded a good value for the city of Syracuse?
Yes, I do. I think in its present form, it's been reconstituted. He's tried several different things, but I think that the format that he has now, combination of the traditional shopping center and the off-price segment of it and the focus on entertainment are exactly the way the mall business is going. The traditional malls that we knew of that were anchored by three department stores, they're becoming dinosaurs. Mm. And what he has here now, I think, is really the way most of the major shopping centers will reformat themselves in the future. And he's been in the forefront of that.
I want to change the subject a bit here, talk about hotels. That's always a perennial issue in discussions about business development and in the attraction of events and other businesses. How do hotels fit into a good development scheme for the city of Syracuse, and how many hotels are enough? That seems like that's part of the conversation as well.
Well, I would start by saying that the biggest benefit of hotels is you're attracting money from outside of the community. 90% of the people using the hotels are not from Onondaga County. So you're bringing money into the community that would not be there. And they're coming for other reasons, but they have to have a place to stay. When you ask the question, how many hotels are enough, to be very honest with you, I think we have enough. We're building another one out at Exit 35. We're going to be building a Homewood Suites, an extended stay, which is adjacent to a very successful Hilton Garden Inn that we've owned for 11 years. But I would say that the market at the moment probably has enough hotels. What will happen, though, is the weaker ones, the old ones, they'll close and go out of business.
And what about hotels downtown? I mean, that's been a big issue as well. Does it matter that there are a sufficient number or a certain number of hotels or hotel rooms downtown?
Well, it matters as it relates to the convention center. Mm. it doesn't matter, in my opinion, as to the overall Syracuse market. But the convention center, if you know, they're going to continue to promote it and have conventions, it does need access to some hotels that aren't too far away.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with building and real estate developer Mike Falcone from the Pioneer Companies. So let's look at this from a higher altitude perspective here. How would you describe Syracuse's overall recent development trajectory?
I think Syracuse today is on a better trajectory than it's been in 30 years. We have had an enormous influx of apartments in the downtown area. We have people living here. We have more people living here than in downtown Rochester or Buffalo. And for a community that is much smaller, the Armory District kicked off a renaissance in downtown Syracuse, which has been continued now with the Pike Block and several hundred more apartments being built, most of them rental apartments. The occupancy rate is 99%. You've had the Armory District has attracted some major retailers, national retailers, which is, you know, the first time in years that we've had national retailers come into the city rather than leave it. So I think that we are on a excellent trajectory right now. This is the best I've seen it in many, many years.
And what about the future? Where are the best future opportunities for business development in this area, do you think?
I think they continue to be downtown.
And I've often wondered, you were referencing the number of people living downtown. Mm-hmm. I often wondered whether this was one of these situations where there was a kind of a critical mass or a threshold that you would need to get over. And then once the city got over that, you start to see other things begin to happen. It sounds like what you're saying is maybe that's true and we have gone to the other side of that now.
We're not quite there. You need one of the things you need downtown is a grocery store, and we don't have one. But in order to get that, you need more population than we presently have. But we will get there.
And when it comes to the development downtown, which is where it sounds like you see not only the present but the future opportunities,
yeah,
and suburban development, are there tensions or trade-offs between those two?
Well, I think globally, nationally, there has been a resurgence in downtowns all over the country. It isn't peculiar just to Syracuse. What's happened is people have returned to the inner cities because they're tired of seeing the destruction of farmland and suburban sprawl. There are a lot of people who feel very strongly about that now, and that wasn't the case 10 years ago. It wasn't even on the radar screen. But people have recognized that. The increased cost of travel, gasoline, have caused people to want to be close to their work. It's convenience, and you know, it's wonderful to be able to walk out your door and go out for dinner rather than get in a car or go to the coffee shop for breakfast and be able to walk to your place of work rather than drive or take a bike. So this is a trend that's not just here. Especially in Denver, we've seen an incredible resurgence of residential construction. We have been involved in the sale of millions of dollars worth of land in downtown Denver, which we had controlled and owned, to apartment house developers. If anybody had told me 5 years ago that we'd be selling off that kind of land at those prices, I would say it's not possible.
Mm. And you mentioned some other cities in upstate New York, In a different venue, I heard you say something recently that piqued my interest, and it was that you thought Syracuse was in a much better position than Rochester.
It is.
When it comes to business development. Could you say a little bit more about that?
Well, Rochester was Smug City USA 30 years ago. They had so much local industry, Kodak, Xerox, Bausch & Lomb. They employed tens of thousands of people. Kodak used to employ 60,000 people. And if you worked at Kodak, you were paid very, very good wages. Well, those jobs are gone. Kodak has 1,800 people there now. And the manufacturing base of Rochester, which stayed much longer than the manufacturing base of Syracuse, they have not been able to replace it the way we have here. In Syracuse, our manufacturing base dissipated much sooner. And so consequently, we started making compensations for that. We transportation center, call centers. We found a way to, you know, to create new job formation. And I think that now in Buffalo, you had the same situation, a huge manufacturing base. Turn of the century, one of the five largest cities in the United States. Transportation traffic with boats, et cetera, gateway to the Finger Lakes, I mean, to the Great Lakes. But that's changed. But Buffalo has had a significant resurgence in the past 2 years, primarily because of the infusion of money that the governor has put into Buffalo. I mean, you know, he claims that he's going to put $1 billion in economic development money in Buffalo. I don't think it's been that or anywhere near it, but he has put a lot of money into Buffalo, and it has helped. So of all of the upstate cities, I would say that I still like Syracuse best, Buffalo second, Rochester third, and then Utica.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with Mike Falcone. He's a prominent commercial real estate developer in central New York and the chairman emeritus of the Pioneer Companies. Well, how would you describe former SU Chancellor Nancy Cantor's effect on the city and downtown?
Well, I think Nancy was the first chancellor in my memory who decided that the university should play a much more significant role in the redevelopment of the city of Syracuse. The town and gown separation that always seemed to be there with previous chancellors, she opened it right up, tore that up, and created an atmosphere that was very cohesive. She was very committed. She said to me one time, "We can't have a great university if we don't have a great city." And it was a very, a very strong statement. And she certainly single-handedly did an awful lot to coordinate. Now, one of the major developments, the first ones, was buying an old warehouse in the Armory District and turning it into, at that time, the architectural school as an interim, and then now occupied by students for other purposes. But as a result of that, we built a new downtown office building because that was sort of a catalyst. I didn't want to build a new office building on this piece of land which we controlled as long as that old vacant warehouse was there. But once it became a vibrant building, then we built a 128,000-square-foot office building and moved several people from the suburbs, including O'Brien and Gear, who brought 300 engineers with them, into downtown Syracuse from Collamer. Which has a great impact on the community and the area. And I'm not sure it would have happened as if that first building hadn't been rehabbed. Then right next to us, they built a new 200-room hotel. So she certainly has had an enormous impact, the West Side Initiative, the bike path, et cetera, from the university. What do we call that? The
Connective Corridor.
Connective Corridor. Uh-huh. All of that has had a very positive impact in the city of Syracuse.
And so do you anticipate a significant change in this area with the new chancellor?
Well, based on my conversations with the new chancellor, I think he will continue, but I don't think he has the same passion for it or appetite that Nancy had. And that may be fine. I think the synergy is already there. The things that should be happening are happening. I don't think the university necessarily has to continue to put the same emphasis on it or the same amount of money as they have in the past.
Shifting topics now to how development and government work together. What's the best working relationship that you have had with a local government or a government official, and what made it that way?
I've had good working relationships with all of our government officials, the mayor, the county executive, town supervisors. I think that we were very fortunate because we're natives of this area. I think it's much easier for people like ourselves who've been here for generations. I mean, my grandfather started in the construction business in the early 1900s. Our family's been here for that long and been in the construction business. Then I went into the development business. My father had preceded me also on a small scale. But it helps that you have these roots. They know who we are. They trust us. And we trust them. And my relationships with every one of them, I have nothing negative to say about any of the towns or county officials. We have been very successful in implementing whatever we chose to do. We had to jump through hoops sometimes. We had to do, you know, create a process, which they insist on, but that's fine.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, and my guest is Mike Falcone, Chairman Emeritus of the Pioneer Companies. So what's the aspect, then, of real estate and building development that local governments have the hardest time understanding and appreciating, in your view?
Well, the most difficult thing they have to understand is the equation of rent versus cost. Unfortunately, because this is not a growth area, the rents that we're able to get today are not a lot different than they were years ago. Mm. And when you include the cost of inflation, they're less. So consequently, in order for the numbers to work on a deal, you really almost need some form of government subsidy. At a point in time in the future, if our rents go up dramatically, then you won't need that. But at this point in time, very difficult to make some people understand, especially some of the public officials, that we're not asking for a handout. We're asking for something that is going to make this deal possible. And if we don't get it, we can't do it. I could not have built a new office building in downtown Syracuse that cost 50% more than the last one I built at 250 South Clinton Street and rent it for, in all practical circumstances, the same rent. It wouldn't be possible. But I did have government subsidy. I did have some government benefits, including some from the state. And that's what made that deal possible. And today, that building houses hundreds of people who spend their money downtown, and some of them very high-paid people because they're engineers, et cetera. And it's 100% rented.
Are there some mechanisms for doing that that you think work better and more smoothly than others? There's been a lot of controversy about pilot programs, for example. I mean, do you have a view about the mechanism through which government helps these kinds of developments?
Well, I think the best mechanism is what we call TIF financing, which we don't practice very well in New York State. Mm. It's here, but it has not been implemented. They haven't perfected it. I've done it very successfully in Colorado.
And what is it?
TIF financing is tax incremental financing. Mm. In other words, you look at a piece of property and what the existing income is in the way of taxes. I'll give you an example. We bought a big shopping center that had a tax base when we bought it of close to $2 million. What we did was knock it down and build a huge project that would have probably, we would have been paying taxes of $9 or $10 million. But the government allowed us the difference between what was there and what we created to take that and finance it with tax-free bonds. And it allowed us to put in all of the infrastructure for really a city that we built rather than a shopping center.
So in a sense, it's kind of like you're getting a break for the value added.
Exactly. That's what you're doing. That's a good way to put it.
So Let me turn this around. If I'm a local government official and you approach me about a potential project, what's the most important question I need to be asking you?
How many jobs is it going to create? Is it going to be sustainable? Are you sure that it's going to be successful? And do you have the financing necessary to make sure that it's a success, including the capital equity requirement?
And do you have a particular development project in your several decades of doing this that you are most proud of, the one that you will always look back at and say, that was really the one?
No, not really. I have many. Not all downtown either. I think, for instance, the Pioneer Business Park was a wonderful project. We took the former land that Carrier owned and used for a park, and made it into this very, very nice business park that employs, that has probably 3,000 people working in it, and 16 buildings and a hotel, and created a pond and waterways and beautiful landscaping. We have wild geese now on the ponds that we created with babies, and you can go out there. It's like a nature preserve.
Well, let me get to the three questions. What's the title of the chapter of life you're currently living?
Well, I'm obviously in the September years of my life, and I am enjoying it immensely, primarily because I have seen my children take over and proceed and keep going with what I started.
Second, what's your worst trait?
Impatience. Very impatient person.
And finally, what achievement in your professional or creative life so far has surprised you the most?
Well, I would say that the scope of the projects in Denver, the size and the how quickly they happened surprised me the most. And I can't take any credit for that. All we did was put up money. That was my son, Mark, who made it happen. He lives there, and he formed his own company, and we were partners with him and bankrolled him.
Well, that was Mike Falcone. Mike, thanks so much for talking with me.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO, Conversations in the Public Interest.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio, and edited by Jason Smith. Research assistance was provided by Brooke Weinstein. The Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. Visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations for more information.